Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Do we have John Howard on the line? John?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Joe.
How are you? Hello, John. Yeah, you're. I'd say you're in a bad old spot for the internet, are you? You're on Skype.
Yes, I'm on Skype, yeah.
Okay, I don't know, I can, that's working out okay. I'm calling you in before I do the introduction because I wanted to see if we had you properly or not. Anyway, listen, it's good to talk to you, John. You're the author of a book, Wendy and I were just talking about it. It's called The Illusions of Happiness, and it's your second book. The previous book was called Incidents Crowded with Life.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, right. Now, I'm just going to give a little bit of context. You were brought up a good Catholic boy, as was I, because I'm Irish, and you were born in Lancashire. And basically, you preferred the G-I-L-T of London than the G-U-I-L-T of Roman Catholicism. You figured out, obviously, at some point that you were gay, so that didn't fit the whole guilt thing. And so you left and you went to London in 1973. Am I correct?
That's right. Absolutely.
And you're a wonderful pianist and great musician. And within a year, you were actually invited to write a score. And that was for the William Holden Peter Fonda movie Open Season. Am I right still?
You're still right.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
And your first album was in Abbey Road Studios.
Yeah, I recorded it at Abbey Road with Tony Meehan, who was the drummer in The Shadows, if you remember.
I remember
the 50s.
The Shadows,
yeah. And we did that through the spring and summer of 74, yeah, at Abbey Road. So, you know, okay. I actually played the same mellotron as Strawberry Fields Forever and stuff like that, so it was very exciting.
That's incredible. So what I'm going to do is paraphrase the first book here and say that meanwhile, okay, when all of this was going on and the success was happening for you musically, you were attacked with a knife by your first lover, beaten up by an East End crook boyfriend, narrowly escaped being gang raped in Malta, you were rescued from being abducted by a serial killer cab driver in New York, and eventually you finally came to a crashing halt when, at the age of 23, you broke your back jumping from your apartment window, escaping from your flatmate's sex attacker. A potentially glittering career and an often perilous sex life were all put on hold as John lay in a hospital bed, unsure if he would walk again. That's the first book, folks, in a nutshell, right?
Yeah.
And the second book, Illusion of Happiness, starts there in your hospital bed with your broken back. Firstly, you had a tough old time of it, John.
To say the least, yeah, to say the least, absolutely.
I know there's probably many a woman in my life would say that their taste in men was quite bad as well, but obviously so was yours.
Pretty awful, in fact. Don't forget I came down from a very small village up north.
Yeah.
And suddenly thrust into London, record deal, management deal, film commission within months of arriving.
Incredible.
And so, you know, you get into situations and groups of people that you've never come across before. So, you know, 20, 21 years old, what do? You know, you just face it head on and see what happens.
And it was a crazy time, the early 70s, mid-70s in London particularly, because there were openly gay people, but not everybody knew as to where they were. And, you know, it was all underground. A lot of it was underground, wasn't it?
A lot of it was underground. And my first single, in fact, was stymied by, you know, a feeling of great homophobia, should we say, within Radio 1 at that time.
Really?
And I only found that out many years later. But there was no reason why Radio 1 would turn the single down, especially since I'd done a session with that song just a few months earlier for Radio 1 for David Hamilton. So when they sort of banned it, it was a bit of a shock.
All right. So Illusions of Happiness then starts in your bed, as I said, in the hospital. So take us through what's been going on.
What's, you mean lying in the bed?
Well, yeah. Like, that's where it starts. And so when was this written? Was this only written in the last number of years?
Well, the first book was written over, I've mulled over the first book for many years, and then finally put it together and got it published, by Fisher King. And they said they want a second book. So I thought, well, I finished the first one in 76, lying in the hospital bed. It makes sense now to move on from there. And, the slow recovery, the recuperation, the walk, learning to walk again, because one forgets how difficult when you've been in bed for months, lying flat.
Muscle wastage and all that, yeah.
Well, that's right. So I had to get back into all that. And then slowly but surely, I got back into recording via Trevor Horn.
Of Frankie Goes to Hollywood fame.
Indeed, okay. Later. Goes to Hollywood fame, yeah.
Later, obviously, yeah, of course. So you managed to keep all the contacts that you had made in the music business. And when you were through the recuperation then, did you have in your head that you wanted to go back and pick up from where you'd left off musically?
Not for a while, no. I'd sort of built up quite a good following in London doing the clubs and the restaurants after my record deal finished at the beginning of 76 with CBS. And I built up a good name doing that. And quite honestly, I was enjoying that more because there was no pressure. You just went out and played and sang. Nobody was pressurizing you over record, release details and schedules and all the rest of it. So I was quite keen not to actually get back into it. It was my manager who suggested I meet Trevor Horn, and that really got the seed growing again, really, quite honestly.
What was the story with being heckled by the Sex Pistols?
No, well, that was the Blitz Club. I don't know if you have you heard of the Blitz Club in Covent Garden?
No. Well,
Blitz Club was it began in the mid 70s when I started playing it, like a 1920s, 30s railway station, with a little upright piano and lots of Horlicks posters on the walls. Then I had my accident, and then I was invited to go back when I was ready to go and play there again, and it had completely changed into a punk venue.
Okay. Slightly different.
So, I sort of stepped up on stage playing Cole Porter, George Gershwin, Loretta Hart, Noel Coward, and it went down like a lead balloon, and the Sex Pistols just happened to be sitting on the front table and just started heckling and shouting at me to get off.
Did you finish your set?
I finished my set with, I thought, I'm going to actually just turn the tables a bit here. So I finished my set with Get It On, the T-Rex hit.
Yes, yes.
And within the first few bars of it, the punks had stopped shouting at me and were singing along with me.
Happy days.
Happy days. And after that, I changed my whole set at Blitz and just did David Bowie, T-Rex type songs,
Okay.
And it changed. So that went down a storm. But still in the other restaurants, I was still doing George Gershwin and Lorenz Hart and Noel Coward.
All that. Yeah. And tell me about how you managed to get a portrait hung in the National Portrait Gallery. Because that's something I'm sure that doesn't happen to people on a regular basis.
No. Quite a lot of things have happened to me that don't happen to people on a regular basis, really, when you look back. Well, that was actually, again, it was a restaurant gig in Twickenham, where I lived at the time. And a painter called Paul Brayson, his father was John Brayson, who wrote things like Colditz and Secret Army. Mm-hmm. He came in with his wife. I didn't know them at the time. They came in as customers and they sat, invited me over for a drink. And Paul said, I'd really love to paint your portrait because I want to do an exhibition in a small gallery in, say, Brook Street or somewhere in London of portraits of artists, musicians, poets, painters, etc. So I thought, great. So I thought it was going to be a little sort of, 10 by 10 little portrait.
Yeah. But
when he'd done it, it was a 5 foot by 5 foot thing.
Wow.
Which he then entered into the National Portrait Gallery competition that year. I think it was Benson and Hedges used to actually sponsor it in those days. And it didn't win. It came second, got a merit, and was hung there for 3 months. And it was even featured on News at 10. It was the lead thing on News at 10 about this National Portrait Gallery. And there behind Reginald Bosanquet's head was my painting.
All 5 by 5 of it. And what, Herb, you're only a skinny little thing, like you didn't even need the 5 by 5, did you?
I didn't, absolutely. I think I got up to about 7.5 stone at one point. Yeah, in those days, yeah.
Oh, I think my left leg is heavier than that. But anyway, there you go. the book then that we're talking about, Illusions of Happiness, does that cover a particular period or does it take us up to today?
No, that takes us up to 1986.
Okay.
And that was basically at the point at which I just changed jobs into quite a big job. I just ended an 8-year relationship and I just bought my first flat. So it made sense really to end it at that point. And it actually began going up to 2000, but my publisher said, there are two books here, John, split them in two. So
okay.
That's
okay.
So the third book will go further.
So if he thought there was two books as far as 2000, we're now in 2020. There's probably a whole series more to go. This could go longer than Harry Potter.
It certainly could. And let's just hope the films are just as successful. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Is there any talk of a film? Is there any talk of going down that road?
Only me. I talk about it all the time.
That's fair enough. That's all right. Look, if you don't have a dream, you can't have a dream come true. Isn't that what they say?
That's absolutely right. But who knows? You know, I mean, Mr. King are a fantastic publisher and they, you know, they get out there and they push the book. So, you know, it's just one of those situations. As with all of us, you know, you just never know. What's that line of John Lennon's? You know, life is what happens while you're busy making other plans. Well,
isn't that exactly it? Now, I know that you shifted career at a certain point, and it's covered in the book, and that's when you take a new career with A&R. And you say that you're at the other side of the business desk. Is that in publishing or is it in, you know, what was it doing?
Well, it was two things, really. I got very involved because I'd always loved pop music and I'd always loved charts and stuff like that as a kid. You know, I used to memorize the charts as a very sad child.
Did you? Yes. Like the top 20 and top 40 and things like that.
Love all that. Yeah. a bit of a list freak.
Right.
So I'd got into the music business via my knowledge, basically. So I used to put together collections of different artists, and so I worked with people like Barry Manilow on a best of his, and with Madness on two best ofs of theirs. They were great guys, really lovely.
Right.
With Steve Levine on a couple of Culture Club album compilations, you know. And then through that moved me into doing A&R and signing up artists like Elkie Brooks and Maria Friedman, who's a big West End star.
Yeah.
And working with Hazel Dean, Sonia, lots of different people I worked with in the 90s, you know. But so it was a natural progression, really, from doing, if you like, special projects where you're putting together these big spend compilations into doing an actual new albums. You know, with Elkie, right. we did an album with her with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra where she did all her big hits, recorded at Air Studios. So it was exciting times, you know.
It's interesting. And when you mentioned Elkie Brooks, I'm glad you came back to her because she was so popular back in the 1980s and she just seemed to just fall off the edge of a cliff, didn't she?
She did. And I always loved her voice. I think
she's got a great voice, yeah.
Her single, Lilac Wine, is still one of my greatest.
Yeah.
You know, I love that, the way she does that. And I'd always wanted to do an album with her. And I came up with the concept of Elkie Brooks sings ABBA, which I could hear really clearly in my head. But when I suggested it to her, I won't tell you what she said, but so there was a lot of four-letter words coming out of the phone.
Really? Like ABBA, ABBA, ABBA.
Yeah, that's right. It sounded a bit like that. Yeah.
Okay. So she's not an ABBA fan then. Okay.
And
what are you doing now? So to come away from the book for just a moment, what's your life, your career now?
Well, I got a big comeback in 2004. RPM Records reissued my first album, Kid in a Big World, the one I did at Abbey Road, which in 75 was released in 75. Deleted by 76 and forgotten by 77. Oh. But it just came and went. But sometime in the early 2000s, there was a whole internet thing going on of, we just seen this album by John Howard in a, you know, an old rare record shop or whatever. Who is he? Is he dead? Okay. Is he still recording? And RPM picked up on this and put the album out and it got 5-star reviews everywhere. It was just astonishing, you know, from an album that wasn't really considered at the time. It suddenly became this big release for a lot of music journalists who are actually too young to remember it the first time round, you know?
Isn't it incredible the way that can happen? If you look at the likes of Charlene back, was it 1982, with, what was the name of the song? I can't remember it. She had the very same thing. She did a minor hit in 76 or 75. Some DJ found it, played it. I've Never Been to Me, that's what the one is, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So you had a kind of a comeback just like that.
Very much so, and it led to a new record deal with Cherry Red, the label, the company which owned RPM. So I did a new album with them, with a guy called André Barrault. And André was the guy that played guitar on Robbie Williams' Angels. Great talent. Oh, wonderful musician. So we did an album together with Phil King, who was in Jesus and Mary Chain. So it was quite a mixture, but fantastic. So we did that, and that was called As I Was Saying. And then from there, I just carried on recording, started performing, and I'm still doing that. I've got a new album out this month, To the Left of the Moon's Reflection, which actually features a song called Illusions of Happiness on it.
We were talking about it, and I listened to it earlier, actually. If I get a chance, I'll play something from it today. If not, I certainly will during the week, and we'll refresh people's memory about the interview. Well, John, I take it that you have stopped getting yourself beaten up and breaking backs and things like that, and life is a little bit calmer for you?
Much calmer. Well, you know, I'm 67, so, you know, I'm just a frail old man now, so people leave me alone.
I doubt that very much. I doubt it. John, it's been terrific talking to you. Continued success with the music and with the writing. I must have put my hands up and say I haven't read the books, but I am going to read both of them, I promise you. And I know that by the end of the second one, I will be looking forward to the third one to take us from 86 to wherever that leads us. So can I wish you well, and a long and happy life.
Thank you very much, Joe. And maybe we'll get together and talk again when the next one comes out.
Look forward to that. Illusions of Happiness, the name of the book, and the author is John Howard. John, continued success. Chat to you soon.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle. Because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.